okay, make sure you're in fellowship, as here we're addressing Jacob's love for Joseph over and beyond all of his other brothers. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons because he was a son of his old age. As we saw earlier, Joseph was emphasized in regards to his young age, being a lad at 17. Now we have the contrast in regards to Jacob being advanced years, called here first and foremost by his name and maturity, Israel. And the contrast is designed to look at the spiritual significance of Joseph's and Jacob's age differential as not being an issue, because in both cases we're looking at individuals who are positive and adjusted to Bible doctrine. Jacob, in maturity, seeing his son Joseph applying at a level that is quite remarkable and distinguished in regards to his otherwise SCA-driven brothers. And it brings out the principle that there is a place of affection that is reserved for positive, like-minded believers that arises above an exception to others around them who are less than. Again, it can't go unnoticed that God Himself expressed the affection towards Jacob and his distaste and dislike in regards to his brother Esau for that very reason. Most, again, commentaries want to take all this and just simply write it off as Joseph was the son of Rachel, his favorite wife. Obviously, these are usually commentaries who don't take the time to truly analyze all that has occurred in context in regards to the lives of these individuals and miss the real spiritual principle that is being emphasized in this regard. Joseph has shown qualities of overruling the sin nature, of an appreciation and acclimation to his authority in life, his father, and Jacob in his maturity relishes in regards to the positive volition of his son. Now, obviously, you can add to it the sense that Joseph's mother died sinning to death otherwise in her own life, whom Jacob had to overcome in regards to his own thinking, making the mature adjustment, recognizing that spiritually she really was a disappointment in regards to their relationship otherwise, even though he under energy of flesh, and it all started in energy of flesh with her, as we know, sought to maintain the relationship with her over Leah, who by all appearances was the real positive one of his two wives in that regard. Another example that I thought about over a break was Isaac and Rebekah and their attitudes towards Jacob and Esau. Rebekah loved Jacob. Divine oracle said he was going to be the covenant heir. She recognized his positive volition. Yeah, she did some stupid things after the fact. She paid a price for it. But Isaac, on the other hand, his affection was for Esau. And what happened to Isaac? Physically, God blinded him, which emulates his spiritual blindness in regards to his relationship with his sons. Now, he obviously made the adjustment too. But there is a place. If you as a parent have a child, one child that's positive and one that's not, and you find yourself finding more affection for your positive adjusted child over the other one, you don't have to feel guilty about it. God has the same type of affection in regards to believers themselves and unbelievers, etc. So, you know, again, it's just one of those things that unfortunately, because people don't want to dig into, interpreters don't want to dig into these verses, they just want to write it off as historical narrative, these types of principles are missed that otherwise are right before us and provide for us a real spiritual lesson. So, again, we have this example going on between positive and negative volition. Just a believer versus a maladjust believer. And again, I'm not saying all of his brothers were ultimately negative throughout their phase two, even though it's hard-pressed to find anything good said about them. Judah maybe being the exception. The rest of it is just mostly, when we get to the blessings, you'll see is mostly just cosmic descriptions and characteristics, if not outright STA-driven. And we have this contrast between positive and negative volition. Here, Joseph, in relationship to his mom, Rachel, even though she was a spiritual dud, he didn't have to be that way, and he didn't. He chose to be positive. So that point 44, page 6 of our notes. Again, we see that volition has no partiality to predecessors or others as to what makes one positive or negative. Again, this is not to, we're not here to discredit the witness of life to others. Our desire for people to get their spiritual act together obviously is in place and is recognized by believers, but this whole attitude that somehow you can make someone positive, that they can be won simply based on one's own desire for them or actions toward them even, and put them and make them get on positive volition in that regards, is bogus. It has no doctrinal grounds whatsoever. Otherwise, Jesus Christ failed in his ministry miserably. He couldn't win over the majority of the Jews around him in his ministry. Volition chooses to do what it does based on its own self-determination. That's the nature of volition. The nature of negative volition is it refuses to believe. The nature of positive volition, you can't keep, wild horses can't keep them from believing. See, no matter what the situation may be otherwise. And again, keep the air clear. I'm not trying to rationalize one's actions towards others otherwise as being anything less than what it should be in our witness to the life. But this idea that people are dying and going to hell otherwise, that's just craziness. And obviously, my exhortations regarding these things comes from my own experience in my own funding background of having those kind of ideas, that kind of human viewpoint driven into my mind. And it's amazing, even years after, and even with years of doctrine, how this baggage continues to try to crop up and rear its ugly head. So you've got to keep doctrine in front of you at all times, keep it clear according to the divine viewpoint that is articulated and taught in the Scriptures, and not let other people influence you apart from that. Or let your own STA that loves to ride on people's guilt, that's an STA driving force in people, guilt. Feel guilty so you do things for people, you know, rather than letting just simply the doctrine and positive volition and being in fellowship drive the individual. So, doesn't make any difference what type of background one comes from. Here, Jacob and Esau, as we saw that, they had equal grounds in regards to believing and not believing. One believed, the other remained an unbeliever. And we have now Joseph with all of his brothers. Joseph's is adjusted, his brothers remain maladjusted. And they had equal footing on both cases. So, again, environment, social status, settings, things of this nature, ultimately, they have no bearing on whether people are positive or negative. Fortunately for us, God knows where positive and negative volition exists. For those who are positive, He will ensure that the truth is received by them so that they can make the adjustments. So, 45, to move on with this now, to show His appreciation, that being Jacob, for Joseph's spiritual orientation, Israel made him a vari-colored tunic or garment. He did something special for him. For his polyvolition and faithfulness to doctrine. So 46, as our parsing showed, the Hebrew makes clear that this garment was a long-sleeved robe, and the Septuagint indicates it was multicolored as it's translated as such. We dealt with that in the parsing. It was a garment, kutoneth, pas means literally flat of hand or foot. Hence the garment came down to the hand, the sleeve did. Hence his long sleeve. Septuagint translates pas as poikilos, which means buried colored. And the main idea is that the clothing was outstanding, exceptional, compared to the normal dungarees or blue jeans that everybody would be wearing otherwise. And also, the word is used in regards to the clothing of royalty otherwise in the Old Testament. So 47, isagogically, clothing of this type indicated one of royalty or rulership. Contrasted to shorter sleeves for the common laborer, we saw that 2 Samuel 13:18. Relationship to Tamar in that situation. So 48, in essence, Israel here portrayed Joseph as worthy of royalty among the family. Someone who is worthy of royalty. Someone who will rule eventually. Well, guess what? He does. And he will, both in time and in eternity, for those who do not otherwise get their spiritual act together. Those who are prize winners in phase three will rule over other believers who did not achieve the prize in positions of authority, the highest rank of governing nations, along with Jesus Christ. The funding wants to make everybody think that every believer that is halfway good will have be rewarded that way, really. So that's how God deals with people. One person can do it half-assed, and the other person can put everything they got into it, and He's going to reward them the same. That doesn't fly. See? That's half-jackass, by the way. Just let you know where my thoughts are at. So 49 implies that Israel setting Joseph forth received exceptional blessing as a covenant heir. So 50, to recount what I've said already in passing, all of Jacob's sons are heirs to the covenant. So that means they were all believers. Up through Jacob, the covenant heir is pretty cut and dry. Three individuals, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The three patriarchs. After Jacob, now it divides into 12s. And all of them become covenant heirs. And again, obviously, these examples in the Old Testament, as we've seen, even with the just believers, can do horrendous things under their sin nature. Doesn't make anything less than a believer. So 51, it is Judah that is handed the rights of primogeniture, inheriting the line of sovereignty through the Davidic and Messianic line, as recorded for us in Genesis 49, 8 through 11. As we will get there, deal with that in detail. Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's son will bow down to you. Judah is a lion's whelp. These verses are messianic in and of themselves. From the prey, my son, you've gone up. He couches and lies down as a lion. As a lion, who dares rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until Shiloh comes. To him shall be the obedience of the peoples, etc. He ties his foal to the vine, his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washes his garments in wine and his robes in the blood of grapes. So in terms of the right to rule and inheritance in that regards, going to the firstborn, that sticks with the line of Judah. And hence, there may be those who take exception to this. He retains the rights of primogeniture. He has the rights of primogeniture in that regards. 52, as we've seen, Moses has already clued his readers in that Reuben, the firstborn, had lost that right per the Bilhah affair, sleeping with Jacob's wife, recorded for us back in 25:22. By those, I say take issue, some want to give Joseph the rights of primogeniture. But I see something different than that. So 53, while one might think that these are the limits of covenant blessing, there is even a higher blessing to be bestowed. And that's point 54. It will be Joseph who will receive a double blessing through his sons based on spiritual integrity, phase 2. Again, Genesis 49 is a blessing and an overview, if you will, in regards to Jacob's sons. Towards the end of Jacob's life. And throughout him, as we'll look at him again in detail. While Judah does maintain the line of Christ through his progeny, Joseph's blessing carries with it the most spiritual accolade of all of them combined. And it comes out in the form of double blessing, which comes through his sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Joseph is a fruitful bough. Verse 22, a fruitful bough by a spring. Its branches run over a wall. The archers bitterly attacked him, verse 23, and shot at him and harassed him. Those antagonistic to his positive volition and divine good production in life to bear fruit. But his bow remained firm, and his arms were agile in defending his own life as a believer through doctrine and application, overruling his sin nature, faith resting, all those things that are applicable from the hands of the mighty one of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. And while Judah retains the rights of sovereignty, of kingship, legally for Messiah. It's amazing that the direct reference to Messiah is associated here with Joseph. From the God of your father who helps you, verse 25, by the Almighty who blesses you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breast and of the womb, all the blessings that's associated with Joseph in this blessing. The blessings of your father have surpassed the blessings of my ancestors up to the utmost bound of everlasting hills. May they be heard. May they be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of the one distinguished among his brothers. Mentioned to crown, wreath, you can kind of put that together. That was 49, 22 through 26. Skip past 15 through 22. 48, 15 through 22, sorry about that. If you was wondering what I was doing, that's what I was doing. And there we have the circumstance where Jacob does the double blessing on his son's heads. When Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on Ephraim's head, it displeased him. Let me get my verses here. Verse 15. And he blessed Joseph and said, the God before, the blessing is upon Joseph, even though the two sons are involved in the blessing. The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked. The God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day. Verse 16, the angel has redeemed me from all evil. Bless the lads, that's his sons. May my name live on in them, in the names of my fathers Abraham and Isaac. That's the reputation. A name is a reputation. And again, all this to me points to the fact that Joseph was positive faced too in distinguishing him from his brothers, at least to that degree. And again, as I said, Judah is still a question in my mind here. As I continue to work these things out in my own mind. And may they grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Verse 17, when Joseph saw that his father's laid his right hand on Ephraim's head, displeased him, and he grasped his father's hand and removed it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Place your right hand on his head. Verse 19, but his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He also will become a people, and he also will be great. However, his younger brother will be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. And part of this is symbolic of the church. And again, these are things we'll deal with when we get there. And he blessed him by that day, saying, by you, Israel, will pronounce blessings, saying, may God make you Ephraim and Manasseh. Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. And then Israel said to Joseph, behold, I am about to die, but God will be with you and bring you back to the land of your fathers. And I give you one portion more than your brothers. So two portions of the real estate clause goes to Joseph. And that reflects phase two, phase three blessing. Which I took from the hand of the Amorite with my sword and my bow. So it will be Joseph who will receive a double blessing. 55, in the real estate clause of the inheritance, he will receive twice his share. 56, this portrays his blessing as maximum blessing on him, both phase two and phase three. People think it's all that happens in time, that emulates or personifies what the niche is going to be in eternity. Not so. Not necessarily. It might. But generally speaking, it doesn't. That it's all about your blessing in time. People can achieve great things, receive great approbation and wealth and power in time. In phase three, they can die and go to hell. So we are here to, if you will, create our phase three eternal niche under these terms and conditions of blessing. So 57, Israel is manifesting his spiritual clarity. That blessing by God under the covenant was to be based on spiritual realities, positive volition, not physical lineage, a fact lost upon the Jews in Jesus' time. So again, maybe a little tough to keep up with me on this. Israel, Jacob's being called by his mature name Israel. He has spiritual clarity. The multicolored garment was an application he made based on that spiritual clarity. It represents royalty. One who is destined, if you will, to have authority and rule. And he recognizes ultimately that it's based on Joseph's spiritual disposition and positive volition. Phase two, that he's going to achieve and receive maximum blessing, both phase two and phase three, just as Jacob expects for himself in this regard. And that blessing under the covenant is not based on simply who you're related to, but it's based on the spiritual realities, just as we saw in regards to Jacob and Esau, and why Esau forfeited his rights of primogeniture and blessing under the covenant. And the Jews obviously lost sight of that. By the time of Jesus, Matthew 3:8-9, they're saying, they said to Jesus, they're making the implication that they'll go to heaven because they're simply Jewish, of who their descendants are. Verse 7. This is John the Baptist. But we have parallel examples. When he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees coming for baptism, which John the Baptist's baptism was a baptism of repentance, a change of mind. Israel needed to change their mind big time in regards to the plan of salvation for their lives. They're recognizing the need for faith at this point in time in their history. They're saying all you got to do is be circumcised, keep the commandments, keep the law, and be Jewish or a proselyte as a Jew. And he just opens his arms, you know, as the Fundies would, and say, yeah, come on down, I'll baptize you. Not quite. You brood of vipers, you snakes. You know, you think I'm a little rough in my language. That's pretty rough language right there, you snake. Who warned you to flee from the wrath to come? That's how he addressed his religious leaders, the religious leaders of his time. Therefore, bring fruit in keeping with repentance. If you change your mind, evidence it by making divine good production, believe in Jesus Christ. This is what he's saying in his own succinct way that they would understand. And then verse 9, he attacks their human viewpoint, approach in regard to God's plan. And do not suppose that you can say to yourselves, we have Abraham for our father. See, their ancestor, the ancestry, their genealogy gives them an up in regards to being included in God's plan in regards to terms of salvation. John destroys that notion. For I say to you that God is able from these stones to raise up children to Abraham. So, again, it's the way a lot of people look at this. It's one's physical relationship that determines certain realities regarding God's plan, where in reality it's the spiritual relationship that one has that determines a person's place and reward or lack of in God's plan. So 58, this interpretation that I'm offering here gives depth into Joseph's brothers' reaction to their father's discriminatory love in verse 4. We all discriminate. Now, obviously, our society has destroyed the meanings for most people that are not on the know of discrimination and prejudice. There's a major difference. Everybody discriminates. There's certain people you don't hang out with, see? That's discrimination. Prejudice is what is supposed to be addressed. Showing partiality based on color, creed, things of this nature. But anyway, most of us know that. But Jacob has discriminatory love based on the spiritual affinity or lack of in his sons. 59, due to their spiritual dullness, Joseph's brothers, they reject the spiritual realities behind Israel's preference for Joseph, as I include in parentheses, as has many interpreters. End quote. Sixty, instead, all they can relate to is a sense of physical favoritism. And see, all this brings out the fact that when you're running on your STA, you're driven by human viewpoint. And your human viewpoint is not going to see the spiritual realities that are right there in front of you. And you will make egregious, misinformed, maladjusted decisions in one's life and judgments upon others. Anyhow. 61, appears to them that Israel, so they see it as physical favoritism. Appears to them that Israel, point 61, was showing partiality based on physical circumstances, as they saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers. Ra, Ak, Ki, Ahab, Ab, Men, Kol, Ak. End quotes. 62, to feed any animosity that might have existed already, due to Joseph's doctrinal integrity, exposing them for what they were, as I brought out, Joseph's moral integrity was the sandpaper in the rift of rubbing his brothers raw to begin with. His brothers ran under their STA. Joseph's, he wasn't willing to do that. He overruled his STA. So this in and of itself is fuel in their thinking that he's Mr. Goody Two-Shoes. Now, he's trying to look better than the rest of us, or whatever, you know, thoughts that come that way. So that sets the foundation, that sets the tone, and why this whole rift occurs in their relationship. And to feed that, point 62, to feed any animosity that might have already existed due to Joseph's doctrinal integrity, exposing him for what they were, now even more so, quote, they hated him and could not speak to him on friendly terms. Sana ethwa lo yakal davar lamed shalom, for peace, literally. They don't see their father reacting to Joseph based on an appreciation and compliment to him for his own volition and faithfulness to doctrine. In isolation of his STA over their malcontent and eruption of STA activity in their lives. See, they don't see it that way. The STA distorts these things. 63, their doctrinal and moral maladjustment grew to hold Joseph in contempt so that they couldn't even verbally be civil to him. To such a degree. Your tattletale, your daddy's favorite. See, that's their attitude. It's not, well, really what you did was right. And we can accept the fact that dad sees a spiritual acuity in you that we don't have. And yeah, you know, he bestowed a gift upon you for that. He recognizes your destiny spiritually. They don't see that. any more than anybody else sees your purpose and reasoning and God's reasoning for things in your life going on, because they're running under their STAs. They're maladjusted. They're going to rationalize with their own human viewpoint critique. We're not to judge by appearance, but we're judged based on righteousness. That's God's righteousness. See? That means you've got to isolate your own STA. You've got to put a divine viewpoint in your own thinking to have that righteous judgment. And their doctrinal maladjustment just simply fed their STA condescending, as they would look at him as being condescending probably, attitude in regards to their brother. And it got so bad that they couldn't even be civil to him in their speech, to talk to him in peace. 64, their STA hatred is the antithesis to the doctrinal love otherwise being expressed by Israel. Completely opposite. So that in and of itself ought to tell you that what I'm telling you here is right. Israel loved Jacob because of what he was spiritually. See, they're running under their STAs. They hate him. They hate him. So, you know, don't let people get on your nerves if they're not maladjusted to doctrine otherwise. 65, the STA rationale of the brothers is pathetic, as they would hold him to be a, quote, goody two-shoes, end quote, and that is only because of whom his mother was. This whole competitive attitude, see, fits into this whole thing. That's who your mom is, all right? 66, as I pointed out earlier, obviously their last rationale of Rachel being his mother doesn't hold water because of the birth of Joseph's youngest brother, Benjamin. Again, probably exempt from this occasion via his young age. He's not part of this whole scenario. So they can't, if it's because Rachel was his mom, well, what about Benjamin? Why didn't he show favoritism to Benjamin? See? You would think probably that would be where the emotions would lie, and the fact that he lost Rachel at the birth of Benjamin and made Benjamin special. See, that's how people think. So, with doctrine, you think things out to its logical conclusion and see the fallacy in regards to a lot of the human viewpoint that is thrown at you otherwise. 67, the brothers loaded up on mental attitude sins, producing hatred that would not be kept hidden verbally and eventually is shown overtly. Three areas of sinning that occurs in our life. Mental attitude sins, that which we think. That's where all sin begins, in your mental attitude. Now I finally put together a doctrine on mental attitude sins. You think you're really Mr. Goody-Two-Shoes in life? Well, we'll see what this doctrine points out to us. Mental attitude sins, what we think, which is largely hidden from everybody else around you. See? Then there is sins of the tongue, verbal sins, that which we speak. And I have two sins, such as sexual lust after others, hatred, to hate. As you can hate somebody with a passion and be smiling and shaking their hand at the same time. See? Verbal sins, lying, things of that nature. Then the big sins, the overt ones, the ones that the fundies will recognize, but largely do not recognize mental attitude sins. I was always brought up, being out of the legalist background I came out of, that you can actually become sinless in time, that what you think doesn't really make any difference. There's no sin there. You can think whatever you want. So, of course, I had a heyday with that. My trouble was the sins of the tongue would reveal it sometimes, and I get in trouble. But anyway. So, the brothers will example Point 68, that mental attitude sins not dealt with will eventually manifest itself in an overt way. Obviously, verbally, it was reflecting upon it. But it will even go overt. 69, Moses offers no criticism on Joseph in this whole ordeal, or suggests otherwise that any of their animosity was deserved. This is not deserved suffering upon Joseph. It's undeserved. He didn't make the coat. His dad did. He gave it to him. What do they hate him for? Because they're jealous. They're envious. 70, Joseph does not let his siblings bring him down and cause him to retaliate. We don't see any revenge tactics. Not at this point. Yeah, later on, he'll get under his STA too, but this is down in the history. When they show up needing food. And he remembered the dream. But here, at this point in time, he really had control of his sin nature, his emotions, in the ordeal, in the situation. 71, he does not allow the worst of circumstances to keep him back spiritually. This isn't going to cause him to crash and burn his own, spiritually in his own life, get under his STA and run under his STA because everybody else is. See, domino effect of provoking people to anger. People get under anger and try to provoke others to anger. 72, the believer has to learn to let people do what they want to do and not let it affect you. You've got to have broad shoulders with doctrine. You know, ultimately, you know, we all want people to think good about us. We don't want people to hate us. But ultimately, what they think or don't think is going to make much of a difference to us. And you can take it up there and throw it at Jesus, I guess, at the Bema Seat and see what he does with it for you. Well, I didn't apply here because so-and-so was did this or did that or said this. Oh, okay. I couldn't do that. I couldn't apply at this level because of somebody else. Oh, okay. Up in smoke. They made a movie about it. So you get on doctrine, you've got to get thick skin, if you will, when it comes to doctrine and people around you that may take issue with it after the fact. They're going to do what they're going to do. That's their volition. If they're believers, they got to work out their own salvation like you're trying to work out yours. And not let those things slow you down, kill your zeal, make you get under your sin nature. 73, hatred, vindictiveness, animosity. Vindictive, to be spiteful. Mental attitude, sin, verbal gossip, maligning, etc. does not have to drag you down. But your STA just loves to jump on board sometimes when people get that way around you and let itself go and react in a like-minded way. Mine's always out there on the road for some reason. I can put a chokehold on my STA and somebody will cut me off and that thing will get out of that rope every time. Well, I recognize it, and you have to rebound it, and you work on it. And work and work and work and work. 74, it only drags you down to the extent that you do not faith rest and commit them to the Lord and pray about it. That's your ammunition. See, first and foremost is having the doctrine, obviously, to recognize it. And then you got to, when people are antagonistic towards you, you got to put it in God's hands. As we would say. And first, that means you got a faith rest. God knows. He knows their attitude. He knows what they're doing. Nothing is getting by God in this regards. And put them in His hands and remember that you save room for revenge from God rather than go out and try to get revenge for yourself. And to the degree you don't do that, to the degree that really you're creating self-induced misery for your own life. 75, people that engage in this sort of mental attitude, sin, and verbal behavior are miserable themselves. People that are like that are miserable themselves. See, USDA is cruel. USDA is cruel. It will make you hurt emotionally, mentally, and otherwise. And people that can't let things drop and move on in their lives and get a hold of grudge, constantly running under jealousy and envy, hate and spitefulness, are miserable people. People like that that can't keep a crowd are not a pleasure to be around, generally speaking. So people that engage in this sort of mental attitude, sin, and verbal behavior are miserable, and you do not have to allow them to make you miserable. That's what they're trying to do, get you under your SCA. No, you pray about it. If it does, you rebound it, and you try to apply doctrine again. Otherwise, Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light us these things in Jesus' name. Amen.